Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to Red Sox Digest, the podcast that pairs Boston baseball heartbreak with sarcasm, spreadsheets, and sound quality that's good enough to get us yelled at on Reddit. I'm Jim Delfino, your host and reluctant optimist, here to guide you through yet another emotional audit of our beloved mess at Fenway. Joining me tonight is a couple guys that need no interruption, but we'll start anyway. First up is Thayer Doyle, assistant principal, former pitcher, part-time Red Sox therapist. He's got kids and a bullpen worth of patience. And then we have Nick Face, the man who considers a defensive shift a personal insult and still believes that Dustin Pedroia is returning any minute now. Let's get into it. Thayer, your initial reactions to today's afternoon game and even yesterday's as well.
The last two games, just phenomenal. The fact that they're pitching, they're throwing fastballs again and not trying to spin everything, that for the most part they're playing defense, the at-bats they're taking, although not as crisp as they were against the garbage pitching that we faced a couple weeks ago, they're still on point. They're moving the ball all over the field. I'm not going to say I fully bought in, and I don't believe that we're World Series caliber, but I think we are at least going to enjoy the rest of the summer into fall and have some meaningful games for a change.
Nick, your initial reactions of today's game and yesterday's game.
Nobody on planet Earth was going to go for a four-game sweep of the Tampa Rays, especially with just coming off the Washington series and then coming off Colorado. You're two of the worst teams in baseball. No one had this down. To get Thursday night's game, that was the most shocking, I think, for all of us. To see them get through that game, got that started off on the win column. The Friday night walk-off, that was just amazing. The crochet, 1-0, spectacular gem. And then today's 4-1 thumping to the Rays. Zidane Rafaela, Garrett Crochet, Roman Anthony. Those are going to be household names for so long right now. I do want to tell you guys, I have some numbers. If you're playing the lottery tonight, I do want you to play the numbers 32 and 20. Do you know what those numbers are?
Sure.
At least play those numbers. That is the Red Sox record at home this season. That has been single-handedly one of the biggest changes and differences that this team has had right now, is them playing at home. We have known this team since 2021. I believe they had a winning record in 2021 at home, but 22, 23, and 24 were abysmal at home. They could not get the job done. First half this season, 32 and 20. These Red Sox fans, they're swinging Sweet Caroline right now, loud and clear. It's great to see.
A 10-game winning streak helps with that, too.
Big time.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people, you know, railroad me on Twitter because I'm so negative with the Red Sox. And here's the thing. The reality is I'm totally not. I love it when they win. I want to win. I'm tired of losing. And I'm tired of not spending good money on good players and trying to find diamonds in the rough. I want to murder every other team that's out there. Games like this over the last 10 days have been the most fun since 21. I mean, in my opinion. And then from beyond that was 2018. I mean, it's like you sit there and you say, I start giggling because it's like sometimes I can't believe what I'm seeing. Like that Rafaela home run today, which we'll get into in just a minute. Unbelievable. I mean, it's so fun to watch this team just destroy other teams and just keep winning and winning and winning. And it's like a drug, you know, and you can continue to keep loving it. A 10-game winning streak, you know, winning solves all problems. It really does. It makes everybody happier. You know, you consider the Devers trade and how all that went down. And of course, everybody's saying, you know, we're not going to miss them. We're not going to miss them. I hope they're right. I hope maybe some things in that clubhouse have clicked and we'll go from there. That's my opening take. But here we go. So first thing that I want to talk about is Sadan Rafaela's all-around impact. So his sixth inning home run tonight wasn't just clutch. It flipped the mood inside Fenway like someone hit the sarcasm switch to hope. And the sliding grab in center yesterday, it's almost like art with him. He's making pitchers look better. He's turning hits into outs, and he's given the roster something that it hasn't had all year, consistency. Nick, I'll start with you. Is Rafaela officially the heartbeat of this team now? And do you trust him to keep this up throughout the dog days of summer?
Offensively, he is the heartbeat of this team, 1,000% right now. I mean, what a world we're living in right now with Sadan Rafaela. How about today's other play in the field where he almost went and made the trap play in center field, came up firing, threw the ball over to third, and the runner was out. It was just stunning between luck coming up, all things Red Sox right now. It's just amazing. I mean, Simpson's not running hard is insane. If that was my guy, if I was the manager, he would have been benched right away. He was lollygagging right around third base, and Rafaela, with the heads-up play, fired over to third, was able to get the runner right there, and Simpson doesn't score. That's how things are going right now for the Red Sox. I feel like, I know you had a tweet out there that Alex Cora made a joke with made some sort of a thing with the Joker or something like.
Deal with the devil.
Deal with the devil. Thank you. Whatever it was is great. I do want to say, ever since the Red Sox went to the White House or the zoo, we have two different avenues that we're at. I don't want to just say the White House because then I'll have people wanting to come knock my doors down here. In my lovely town, they also went to the zoo. You know, Crochet went to the zoo, Cora went to the zoo, and some of the others. They're 10-0. So you can say Trump saved the Red Sox, or you could say Mighty Joe Young saved the Red Sox from the zoo.
Bear, your reactions to Sadan Rafaela's all-around impact on this team, and is this sustainable for him?
Yes. I think defensively, it's absolutely sustainable. And this is what we've sort of been seeing for the last year and a half with him, especially when he's in center field. He is the captain of the outfield defense. He gets to every ball. He makes every play. When he's focused, he is a very gifted outfielder who's going to make outstanding plays like we saw today. It's that moving him around that I worry about. As long as they stop doing that, he's going to stay comfortable in center field. He's going to stay, you know, you joke about, you know, former pitcher. Even at the collegiate level, minor, nothing big. When you have someone in the outfield who, whenever you give up a fly ball, yeah, I'm not going to say no, he's going to be there to catch it. It gives you a whole different outcome, whole different sort of experience. When you know, okay, it's all right if I miss my spot because he's going to be out there to get it. That does so much for the confidence of your pitchers. And offensively, he's got the most. Anthony's a tremendous ball player. Saw the skills, like the physicality of Duran. I think from the total proven ball player on the Red Sox is Rafaela. He's got the wheels. He's for power, and it's not there yet. But honestly, I think as he grows more accustomed to major league pitching and the ability to stay within himself and not chase things, his average is going to start to rise too. He's going to be, I think, probably one of the better ball players that we've had in the final.
Yeah, you know, I'm really impressed with him. Kind of gives me Byron Buxton vibes a little bit, but I just hope he stays healthier than Byron Buxton. Yeah. The other thing is, too, is that I think it's not out of the question for him to be a 2020 guy this year. And, you know, from moving forward on that, even in the future, 25-25, I think he's got 20 to 25 power, you know, especially if he stays within himself. One of the things that I have said many times, and for listeners that maybe not have heard me say this statement, is that, you know, people were down on him offensively last year. And I said over and over again, you have to give him a pass because he's learning two major positions as a rookie, shortstop because of the Story injury and center field. And I don't want to go into that in a lot of detail tonight. You can certainly listen to that on other podcasts. But You know, I think what you're seeing is a guy that has been told center field is your spot, and he's taking it by the storm, and his defense is good enough that he doesn't have to worry about that too much, and he's focusing on his offense. And it's just been unrelentless over this 10-game span. And, you know, look, I mean, if there's any kind of last-minute injury in the outfield for the All-Star game, he might get a call. I don't know. I don't want him playing. But, you know, it's just one of those things. And as far as yesterday's game's concerned, playing second base, you know, Meyer had a nice hit today. And I tweeted it out there. I says, he's got to play every day. Left-handed, right-handed pitching. We can't platoon him. I want to see what we got. I want him there playing second base every night. You know, if they want to go ahead and do a platoon with Romy a little bit and Toro, you know, a three-man rotation for first and second, I'm okay with that for the most part. But he's got to be playing just about every day because he's not going to learn to get better at, you know, at his craft if he's just being used as a platoon player. So hopefully the Red Sox will do that. And, you know, we'll obviously see, you know, him continue to break out even more. Moving along, the second thing I want to talk about is the obstruction play. Rule went Boston's way today, the obstruction at third base. And I think it was Meyer, of all people. He was awarded home and the Rays were left blinking like they didn't know what the hell happened. It was weird. It was borderline. And by the letter of the law, somehow correct. Was this a fair call in your mind, or did the umps just kind of flip a coin and hope for the best? And how would you coach around that rule if you had to? Thayer, I'll start with you.
Fair rule. It was true. He put his foot out. He had it parallel to the base to block it. That's, in my eyes, a stupid rule. I think it's sort of, you know, the idea of blocking the bag is sort of you block it at your own risk. And the reason it's becoming more fashionable is the head first slide. Back in the day when people came in spikes up, you did not put your leg in front of the bag because you paid the price. So with the way the game's played nowadays, they have to really start to institute it and follow that law rule because all the hand sliding. So yes, it's true. It's was read right. It's lucky because again, and this is just, we talk about the, what we used to see with the Red Sox, a lot of the stupidity, that's a little bit more stupid base running. Two outs, you have a guy who's not a big sort of split pitcher who throws the ball in the dirt for your strikeout pitch. You don't need to start creeping down the line at third base in that situation. You know, you just take your normal lead and you can't be getting picked off. They got lucky in that situation. But it's there. It was the right call. Unfortunately, that's, again, sort of the direction that baseball's going. Because you can't take a guy out anymore. You have to slide directly into the bags. They're trying to make it safer for everybody. So that's kind of at least how they're playing it off. And yes, it was the right call.
Nick, a similar question to you. What did you feel initially when you saw that, how it was overturned? And obviously, I'm sure you're happy about it because it went the Red Sox way. But assume that in a situation that happens in the future, that it doesn't go the Red Sox way. What was your thought of that rule? And, you know, what's your take on that?
Well, for one, kind of like you, Jim, with getting that sick enjoyment out of things, I laughed instantly when I saw it. I'm like, oh, my God, did that really just happen? Did the Red Sox really just get another call their way? That was my first reaction. My second reaction that went down was, I think you guys know I'm a traditionalist. I like things played the way that they were brought up. I'm so sick and tired. I personally hate the extra inning rule with the runner on second. I think it's getting way too ticky-tacky. And I understand the injury and all this safetiness that Major League Baseball is trying to make in this whole new generation that we're getting accustomed here in baseball. But to tell you the truth, I've just had enough. I remember back when I was a kid loving the fact when Jason Veritek pulverized a guy coming home and they had nowhere to breathe to get to home plate. I miss those days. I'm sorry, I do. Veritek was the king of it with blocking the plate. He put his leg out. He'd do anything that he could to make sure he had the advantage for making sure the runner's not going to cross that base. And all I can think of with these situations here is 20 years back when we were watching these games, that never would have happened. It very well could have been and should have been in a way, 1-0 Rays at the time. But to our advantage there, the umpire did, again, because it's the rule right now with obstruction, did make the correct call. I can't get on the umpire by saying he was being bigger than the game. I can't do that because that is the correct call now in this game. And I don't like it.
Yeah, I agree with you 110% on that. And, you know, one of the points that you brought up was, you know, catchers of years ago, because you'd have a regularly big guy be your catcher because you wanted someone strong. You wanted someone bulky to be able to block that plate. And, you know, it was a big thing, especially if a runner's coming in and the ball's there before him. And it was kind of like, you know, the immovable object meets the irresistible force. And it was who was going to win that battle. And Veritek is a great prime example of it, how he's built. Sandy Leone, Ernie Witt. I mean, we can go on catchers who were built like that frame. And it seems like now you're seeing things a lot differently. You got a guy like Connor Wong, who's 4'9" and 120 pounds soaking wet, who's a catcher. And a lot of this happened with the Buster Posey injury, I think, you know, and that's where things have changed, you know, and even with double plays, you know, obviously, you know, having what is considered to be, you know, the rehash on a play, you know, and so forth. But you used to have what would be the neighborhood play, right? So even if you didn't touch the bag on a double play, you were close enough and so forth, and that just went your way. But, you know, nowadays, you know, with watching the film over again, it just doesn't happen that way. So I don't know. Like in this situation, I was happy that it went the Red Sox way, but you know, I think it does take away some of the old time traditional baseball where, you know, you try to block a little bit of a bag so that it made it more difficult, you know, for a player to be able to reach. So
here's another one before we wrap it up. One of the biggest impactful ones was in 2013 in the World Series. Game 3, Will Middlebrooks got into a little bit of I think it was Alan Craig. Believe it or not, at the time.
He was going to third base.
Got tripped or something like that and went down. So, I mean, it happens. And that call did not go the Red Sox way. It was one of the most controversial end of games that we've ever seen. And at that point, back in 2013, they're pretty much all screaming, oh, great, now the Red Sox are down 2-1. What are we going to do here? So That definitely has impacted in Red Sox history before.
Sure has. Another topic I want to talk about is obviously partly the Red Sox offense, but kind of going back into that sixth inning. So Story has an RBI single. Rafaela has that 2-run bomb. And essentially we're watching, you know, a real offensive execution. And it was pretty strategic. You had quick at-bats, pinch hunting. No one tried to do too much. Are we seeing signs that this lineup is finally maturing, you know, before our eyes? Or is this just the fact that the Rays are not that good? I mean, I'll start with this. I don't really think the Rays are that great of a team. You know, I put this out in our chat and a couple people said yes or no, but I mean, I understand that they were ahead of us for a majority of the season and they're kind of like quietly, you know, been hanging around. But, you know, outside of a couple guys, and of course, they don't have their full rotation with McClanahan and so forth. But I don't know. They don't really. And again, I'm not saying it because we won, 8 games against them this season, but they don't scare me. Nick, I'll start with you.
It's a different kind of Rays team. It really is. They don't scare me either. I mean, I know it's a results business and the Red Sox have had the upper hand. Kevin Cash has a little bit of play as manager. I thought he got outmanaged every bit of the way against Cora this weekend. I think a lot of it, McClanahan's down for them. They don't have Randy Arozarena anymore. That was another big guy that they had before. We all know about their criminal, so we're not going to talk about him. And it's just, this is who the Rays are. I'm not thoroughly impressed with what they have. They always find a way, though, to stay in it somehow, some way with their philosophy from everything. But I think overall, when you look at the team as a whole from the Red Sox, again, this was another one of those confidence-building series. And by sweeping the Rays here, the Red Sox have really come together and started to believe in themselves. I think no matter who the competition or who the talent is, we have to look at that scope to see how this team has been identifying themselves. This Red Sox team has an identity now, guys. They do. Whether it was from trading Devers or just coming together and clicking as a unit. They are doing this right now. Is it sustainable? No. They are going to lose again, folks. I just want to make sure that that's crystal clear. They will lose. It's going to be a while because we have the All-Star break, but they will lose again. We have a very tough series coming up against the Cubs right after the All-Star break. You got the Dodgers mixed in there as well. This is not going to be the Washington, the Colorado, the Rays teams anymore. It's nut up or shut up time come Friday. So fasten your seatbelts.
Fair. Similar question, but I'm going to rephrase it a little bit. Obviously, we had some really terrible competition, you know, with the Reds, with Washington, and with Colorado. And we talked last week, we said, you know, and I think you even wrote it, that, you know, the season starts today, meaning Thursday. And this four-game series, you know, I think most of us thought we'd be lucky to win two out of the four. And I kind of thought the Crochet and Bayo games gave us our best opportunity. Are the Rays not that great of a team, or are they a really good team and you beat a tough competitor? Your thoughts?
We beat a tough competitor, but they're not a really great team. The Tampa Bay Rays are what the Tampa Bay Rays have always been. They are an analytical team that thrives on pitching. And now we've talked about it. Nick, you know, brought up that, you know, McClanahan, and there are guys that are hurt, but they still manage to put a roster of pitchers out there that are effective and challenge you. They also have an offense that is very opportunistic. And Jim, we've talked about this forever. It always seems like the Rays beat you with one inning. They're going to get a few hits. You look at the box score and like, how the heck do we lose to these guys? They got six hits all game long. But four of them happened in the same inning that went along with the walk and that went along with an error. They are very opportunistic. They are the ultimate analytical team. They look for the true outcomes. They strike out, they walk, or they homer. There's not an awful lot in between. And when your pitchers keep them in the ballpark, you have a much better chance. And the most important aspect of this thing, in four games, the Red Sox walked them seven times. They did not receive a walk today. They did not receive a walk yesterday. And when you do not give the Rays extra opportunities, it's very difficult for them to manufacture runs because that's not what they do. And that's why we were able to beat them. When our pitching does that, it provides the opportunity for us to be successful. The Rays are a good ball club. We saw that with their defense. We had an opportunity. They were making plays left and right today. We probably should have really wiped them out. It shouldn't have been 4-1. But they're making plays up the middle with their shortstop, their third baseman. Granted, he couldn't throw today, but they still made a couple really nice plays. And the outfield the other day, we saw some tremendous things. That's what the Rays are. They take advantage of your inability to do the things correctly. And to the credit of the Red Sox, for the most part, they did everything correctly today. And that's why.
Yeah, that's some great points, you know, and it doesn't even go beyond this season. Like you said, the Rays have been basically the mosquito of Major League Baseball. They're opportunistic and they just kind of like find ways to sting you in one little small inning, and it just changes the complexity of the game. And if you allow that to happen, you will lose. I mean, yesterday was a classic example, you know. I mean, runner gets thrown out at the plate. I mean, if he scores, you know, it's 1-1. Who knows what that game winds up becoming? It probably goes to extra innings, and the Red Sox probably lose that game for all we know. So, you know, it is something where you have to neutralize them. And to your point about the seven walks in the entire series and none today, another big thing, and, you know, we've talked about this a million times, don't give extra outs, don't give free passes. And that's where you're going to get yourself into trouble, because the Rays are going to do the Rays things. They're going to bunt guys over. They're going to suicide squeeze. I mean, Kevin Cash is he's a very smart guy. There's another catcher with a big frame that we were talking about before. You know, he's a very smart analytical guy himself, but, you know, they are not a very great offensive team. I mean, there's Junior Caminero. He looks like he could be a potential stud, you know, moving forward. But, you know, he is also not polished. You could see it. His average is down. His OPS is down. You know, he's got the power. If he kind of figures that all out, he might be, you know, one of the top third basemen in the league. But until he does that, you know, he's going to be just kind of a mistake hitter, kind of like some of the other guys we've seen on their teams in the past. So we'll see how it goes. Nick, I think I got to follow up with you on that. What are your thoughts?
Just in general on how this series went. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, the Rays, do you have any other things to add on that as it relates to them being a real good team, or are they just kind of like a smoke and mirrors? And as it relates to the Red Sox moving forward, I mean, are you happy that we beat good competition, or are they really not that great?
I don't know if I want to put them up as great competition. I just think they do the little things right. You know, defensively, we saw so many plays between a Marcelo Meyer ball getting taken away. I forget who was up. What have been Roman Anthony? There was a ball at some point that went, the right fielder made an incredible catch on. But defensively, they are for real on that end. I think the bats, Yanni Diaz, maybe Junior Caminero, a little bit, I might say, that have some potential there. I don't think they're ready just yet, though. I don't. I think they're trying to find their way in figuring out what they're going to be. I do think, though, for when it comes to the analogy of the mosquito.
Love Red Sox Digest? And stop freeloading and subscribe already. Free subscribers get recaps, rants, and the occasional emotional breakdown. Just like Craig Breslow with the trade deadline. Upgrade to a paid subscription and unlock the full archive. Subscriber-only game breakdowns, behind-the-scenes audio rants, exclusive mailbag Q&As, plus live chat and post-game streams where we scream into the void together. And if you're a true sicko, become a founding member and we'll put you on the podcast. That's right, a guest appearance on Red Sox Digest. Hit subscribe. It's cheaper than Fenway beer and way more satisfying.
Oh, which I loved what you said. You couldn't have said that better. They are. They're a thorn in the side. They've always been that way for the Red Sox. So I'm happy with the 4-game sweep. Don't get me wrong. But it's going to get harder. Let's make sure we emphasize that. I think fans right now are wanting to raise this trophy right now. It's a long season. We're at our best stretch we've been yet. We can celebrate that. That's great. You know, our first half is done. But it's going to get harder. Okay, like I said, it's nut up or shut up time come off against the Cubs. It's going to be a whole lot different, but the Red Sox are riding momentum. And I think that is the biggest takeaway right now from these final 10 games that they've had, is that the Red Sox are on their best trajectory yet. Let's sustain that. And if they do that, this team becomes buyers. I would say right now, Breslow, work the phone, go improve your roster.
Yeah, with the All-Star break starting tomorrow, I think this is a really good opportunity for them to really start to say they are buyers. The team has proven it. I think, you know, we talked about the Rays, and, you know, the point of my question was really to emphasize that you didn't have another lame duck team that you were facing. It wasn't the White Sox coming on and you won 10 in a row and it was against those three teams, Chicago, Colorado, and the Washington Nationals. So you had your best competition in a while and you swept them, which is very hard to do even against poor competition. A 4-game sweep is a very hard thing to do. Whether it's home or away, it's not easy. And you did it. And I think ownership and management have to look at that and say, let's not start waiting around for July 27th, July 29th, the 30th, and see how it goes. No, they should be on the phone right now, and they should try to solidify one or two pieces that they can identify that they can get, that they are happy to include the right pieces to acquire that player, and they should do it now, and they should be swift so that they don't get into a situation where they have to basically, you know, outbid themselves for the same competition piece. And I know I'm speaking of Joe Ryan, but get it done now and so that we can move on. Nick, your thoughts on those comments and about the trade deadline?
Well, I did find it interesting that John Henry was at Fenway Park today. I don't know if you want to put two and two together on that. Yeah, I never knew that he existed anymore. I thought he lived in Liverpool and he only cared about that. Apparently not. So John Henry was at Fenway for the three All-Stars going off, you know, your Crochet, Bregman, and Chapman. But it made me think here a little bit that John Henry might have a pulse on this and might be trying to show his face a little bit more because he wants to actually have a good season. Just a thought, actions speak louder than words. But without question here, I think that the buzz and the chatter and everything that's going on with this team, I think that it's in the best stretch they've been in nearly four years. This is a team to believe in right now, and you need to improve no matter what it is.
Fair your reactions.
Absolutely need to make some moves. This is a team it's ready to go. And I'm not saying ready to go to the World Series. This is a team that's ready to develop winning habits and understanding what the pressures of a playoff race are all about. And they need to provide some support for this team. The only concern I have is if you look at wild card roster, you know, ironically, we are now the second wild card team. We're a game up over Seattle, but there are six teams within 4.5 games. You know, six of the other nine teams that are not already in the playoffs in the American League. So that means there are a lot of teams that feel they're close enough. And that worries me with what they're going to be able to do and how quickly they're going to get it done. I agree. I pine for the Dombrowski days where I saw, we need this, let's do that now. But even now, the Phillies, I don't think the Phillies are going to be able to make that kind of quick move because so many of these teams feel that they're in it. And the teams that aren't understand that there are so many teams that may come calling that I'm not going to pull the trigger right now. So you're not going to be able to get sort of one of those nice, quick, cheap deals out of the way that they might have to wait a while, unfortunately.
You know, this is my love-hate relationship with the third wild card. You know, on the one hand, it allows for more competition to be, you know, in the playoffs. And on the other hand, it keeps more teams thinking they can make the playoffs. And so they have to look at that, you know, the Mendoza line and say, you know what? We need to wave the white flag. We need to sell. And unfortunately, because you can make the playoffs now with less wins, and especially in this American League that is pretty god awful, teams are not ready to wave that white flag that early. And so as a result of it, you've only got one or two, maybe three teams that have anything of any value that you're going to want. And the aside that I want to put to that is, I think it actually makes those players that are available even worse because now teams that think they're still in it don't sell. So what's left over is actually a crappier loot of guys because those teams are really, really bad. Not just middling, but really, really bad. So you're lucky to get and pluck one guy off one of those teams. And so I think that's why it's so important for them to really say to themselves, we're not going to wait and see anymore if we feel that they're going to be a competitive team. You need to do that now. Like I would have somebody by Friday. That's how I would do it. Because if you get someone like Joe Ryan, you're going to have him for what, maybe three more starts, four more starts before the end of the month. I think that's important. So there's no benefit to them waiting anymore outside of the fact that they can't come together with a deal. And then you got to move on and find a team that you can.
I think basically when you look at it, it's basically you get the losers rejects is what it is.
Right. That's exactly it.
And then on the Joe Ryan front, it's a matter of what are the Twins going to do? Are they going to wave the white flag right now? I don't know. So that's the other thing. Would they want to dangle Joe Ryan right away or wait until July 31 to figure out which direction they're going to go?
Yeah, I mean, the other part of it is, too, is unless there's a guy out there that we haven't identified yet that is on an existing contract for more than a couple years, that is an albatross contract that you can go ahead and you can eat some of that money, especially with the Devers contract gone. Unfortunately, off the top of my tongue, I can't think of anybody that is on a contract like that, that's on a team that is not destined for the playoffs. I mean, you look at the Phillies like a Zach Wheeler or something like that. That would be the kind of like mold of a guy that you'd want. But again, the Phillies aren't selling. So where do you find that guy? And, you know, I know Sandy Alcantara has been brought up a few times. that's not a guy I want. He's having a very bad year. He's on a team-friendly style contract, but it's not a guy that's going to move the needle and be placed into a number two position and move everybody down the line and improve your rotation. It's just not going to do that. Speaking about rotation, the next topic that I want to talk with was Brian Bayo. He gave us exactly what this rotation has needed, 6-plus innings and genuine control. He's put together 5 strong starts now with a 2.40 ERA, cutting down walks and commanding his arsenal like he really means it. Today's velocity was pretty steady. He was hitting, you know, upper 90s. He seems to be becoming more mature in every start that he's had. Question for you. We'll start with you, Nick. Is Bayo locking into a role as a reliable upper-end starter, or is this going to be a situation where one bad outing again and panic starts?
No, Bayo's finally developing into the guy that the Red Sox are hoping he was going to be. I think a lot of it has to do, and we've talked about this repeatedly here a lot, is the mental ability and the focus for Bayo on the mound. Bayo's biggest trouble has been when he gets runners on and gets himself into hairy situations, it turns to hell. This season has been so much different, and it is very refreshing to see. You see a guy who has commanded the zone. You see a guy who's been able to locate and focus on the next batter. He's not worrying about what happened the batter prior or afterwards. He's focusing on the now. And that is a major step in the road of Bayo being an anchor here in this rotation. I am not ready to say he's a 1-2 yet. I'm not ready to do that. He is making steps and progressing well. I would have him comfortably be my number 3 guy right now. I feel very confident when he's going out there each time and giving a quality start. I think the biggest thing here has been, again, he's prepared, he's focused and determined to attack the batter right where he's at. He worries way too much when he has people on over the years and worrying about the runs that have scored and not being able to bear down. He's done that tremendously this first half. And remember, second half is traditionally when Bayo turns the corner here. So this could be a really outstanding season when all said and done for Brian Bayo.
Fair, same question to you. Your thoughts and reactions on Brian Bayo, and is he becoming the front end of the rotation guy that we kind of were hoping he would be?
Mm-hmm. I agree with Nick. I'm going to say it, number 3. His stuff has never been the question. He's always had really, really good stuff with that changeup and the fastball. He's developing the slider. Earlier on in this year, we saw him, and he was sort of doing the typical Red Sox thing, just spinning and spinning and spinning. What got him to the major leagues was his fastball movement and his changeup, the ability to go back and forth on it, and that's what made him so successful. He put that changeup away for some reason, and that is what got him in the hole. He's coming back out of that. He's working off that fastball. Like Nick said, he's attacking people. He's getting ahead and putting guys away. I think 2 things have been sort of outstandingly beneficial to him. 1, the fact that he made a number of these starts against trash competition. And that has given him incredible amounts of confidence. God bless. Incredible amounts of confidence to really deliver what he needs to do and understand that. And this is the hardest thing for pitchers to remember. The batter is going to make an out 7 out of 10 times if they're outstanding. Outstanding. So as a pitcher, you're always trying to make your best pitch, but not to worry about not making that best pitch because they're not going to drill it every single time. They're going to not hit your mistakes all the time. That's been beneficial. And the other piece that's been the most beneficial to him is the defense. Gets back to that confidence we were talking about. He knows now that when he gives up the fly ball, they're going to catch it for the most part. When the ball's on the ground, his team is going to make the plays. He's confident enough to work within the strike zone, knowing that he can pitch to contact. And by pitching to contact, he's reducing the number of pitches he's throwing, which keeps him stronger throughout the game, which allows him to go longer, which gives him that ability to to kind of hold back. He doesn't need to throw the 97, 98 mile an hour fastball all the time. He can live around 95, but no, he has that different gear when he needs it. And that's been the most beneficial thing I've seen this year for Bayo. And like Nick said, physicality has never been his issue. It's between the ears. When he's focused and in tune, he's on point. And I think Narvaez has been really beneficial for him today. And it
absolutely
Wong did a very nice job today. I didn't see an awful lot of shaking. The two of them seemed to be on the same page, which was nice. But I think Bayo in particular has really benefited from having Narvaez.
You know, one of the things about Bayo that I've noticed this year is that leap in maturity. So if you remember a play that happened in today's game, I think there was a comebacker and he got a glove on it and then it went towards Story and the runner got on base. And you looked at his face and it kind of reminded me of Happy Gilmore, the movie. When Happy Gilmore would get pissed off, he would go ahead and try to slam, you know, his hockey stick and everything like that. And the one time he contained himself, the announcer said, "Wait, what's this? Is this a new Happy Gilmore?" And it's the first thing I thought about when I saw that happen. And I'm like, he's kind of learning to contain himself, stay within himself, show that side of maturity. And that's what he's going to need moving forward to be an effective starter and be able to shake off that. The other thing that I thought about was Mariano Rivera. And I know it's not apples to apples here, but he was a closer. Bayo's not. But just bear with me for 1 minute. They asked Mariano Rivera, says, "What's the number one thing you need to do being a closer when you give up the game?" And he says, "Have a very quick short-term memory." And the idea here is that if Bayo can just kind of forget about those little intangibles when something bad happens, concentrate on the next batter. And to your point there too, knowing that your defense has got your back, he's going to be a more effective quality starter. Nick, I think you wanted to chime in.
So what you're basically saying here is Alex Cora is Chubbs.
Maybe that's Bailey.
I had to. Oh, that's Bailey. That's right. It's Bailey. No, Alex Cora is the grandmother.
Yeah, right.
That's great.
Next topic.
Damn alligator.
Well, I'll open it up to you guys instead, you know, since it's the day before the All-Star break. I was going to do a little bit more on the Rays, but I'll open up to you almost as closing thoughts. So, Thayer, take us through a topic that you would like to mention as it relates to the first half, second half, or your thoughts or whatnot.
What I am thoroughly enjoying is that we are talking about the baseball that played on the field. We're talking about the games. We're criticizing plays. We are commending plays. We haven't really done this since 21. The team hasn't been in a place where we've cared enough. And you sort of, I was going to say it earlier when you were talking, that as we're watching the game, we're watching the games now with interest. I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan, and I'm going to admit that last year and the beginning of this year, I was watching the games almost haphazardly. If they're on, I'm going to watch them. I'm not going to pay much attention. You know, I'm not shocked when they're getting picked off, when they're making stupid base running mistakes, they're making terrible defensive plays. They're up there striking out 15 times in a game because that's what they were doing. They were losing the interest of the fans. The games didn't matter. All that we talked about was how we wanted to have them sell the team. We wanted people fired. We wanted guys DFA'd. Now we're actually back to talking about the game and how important it was that when Rafaela didn't actually make the catch, he was in tune enough to come up throwing to third base. The fact that the runner was coming home just had an absolute horrendous play of stopping, that just adds bonus to it. Like, the play was amazing that he didn't make the catch, but was close enough to making that catch. Comes up, has the wherewithal to make the throw to third base right on the money to get the runner. That should have been 1-0, but he stopped it. The bonus was the fact that we had the stupid base runner going home. That finally, that went our way. That's what I'm glad we're talking about. I'm glad we're having those discussions. The conversations about should O'Shea come out for the ninth or should we go to Chapman? where it's a legitimate discussion. Like, what all-star do you want pitching the ninth inning of a 1-0 game? Going back to the Judge series, you know, the Yankees game. Does Crochet pitch against Judge, or do we have Chapman? We really haven't had those discussions in a very long time, because it used to be, of course, we want the starting pitcher to come because the guys we have in the bullpen are gutless bums and it doesn't matter who's coming out. Now we have players that are living up to their potential and we're finally talking baseball as opposed to just the nonsense that was going on for the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, excellent, excellent points. Nick, your final thoughts and reactions.
I echo what Thayer says as well. It's been nice to have something to enjoy watching, but I do want to emphasize that I believe that this change in direction was triggered in a couple different facets. So number one, the boldest decision of all was telling Devers to go pack his bags and you're out. Okay. That takes a lot of, number one, being bold from Breslow to do and making it happen. I still don't like the package and everything that we got for Devers, but it's making me more and more interested to see if Devers really was this big issue with this team, and now they're trying to really work on finding their identity. They're at that piece right now, and we're coming up on, it's going to be 21 years since the boldest trade decision that was ever made from a trade deadline was made when the Red Sox traded fan favorite Nomar Garciaparra and brought in Dave Roberts, Doug Minkiewicz, and Orlando Cabrera. And boy, did those moves all trigger a change in that team. So will the Devers move go down as the trigger here that started the Red Sox to finding themselves again here for this 2025 season? And the last thing I'll say here is, obviously, with Devers going, it enabled the Red Sox to bring up Roman Anthony and to get Marcel Meyer and truly develop some of these kids that we've been hearing ad nauseum about for the last few years. And now they're here. Now we're able to see and witness what their real talent is. And I'm as big of a fan of Roman Anthony and Marcel Meyer right now as I could be. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what their second half is going to look like. We're at the most enjoyable part of the Red Sox season that truly we have probably seen since the early beginnings of 2019. And passing on 2021. Because let's not forget, this team got hot at the very end of the season in September and got themselves into the playoffs. The 2021 season, there was a lot of complaining. There was a lot of, get Cora out of here. What the heck is this team doing? How is this team, how was this team a championship team in 2018? There was that chatter. They just so happened to get hot at the very end in 2021. That's great. I was happy to have them be in the playoffs. But to me, it felt not real. It didn't feel like it is right now. We'll see how the second half goes. But we're closing off the first half right now, and I couldn't be happier right now with where they're at.
You know, in closing, I'd like to say what I started off saying earlier in tonight's show. It's a lot more fun, and it's a lot easier when you're winning. It's more enjoyable to discuss the Red Sox when they're winning. And to Thayer's point, talking about little nitpicky things that could go this way or that way in a positive way. You know, do you pinch hit X in this inning? Do you leave Crochet to go into the ninth? You know, how do you set up the seventh, eighth, and ninth after six innings from Giolito? Are we going to go Justin Wilson, Garrett Whitlock, and, you know, Chapman? Those are the things I want to talk about. We might second guess some of those plays, but we're not going to have to deal with the Pablo Reyeses of the world, the Matt Dermottys of the world, and all these guys that should never, ever be on a major league roster, in my opinion. So it's great to start talking about those small intangibles now. And to both of your points, whether or not Devers is Nomar Garciaparra 2.0, I don't know if we'll ever know the full facts on that. But what I can tell you is that the chatter that you see online about Devers, you know, kind of ghosting Will Clark, who I have a lot of respect for growing up. I love that guy as a first baseman. And, you know, just some of the other things. He's got a herniated disc in his lower back now. So I don't even know how his second half is going to play out. But it's clear to me that that contract is not going to be a good one when it's all said and done 7, 8, 9 years from now. And who knows where he's going to be. But I will tell you this. If Roman Anthony can replace, and I'm not saying one for one, so bear with me here, everybody. If Roman Anthony can replace in some way Devers' offensive output, we won't miss him. We won't miss him. And when I see Roman Anthony batting, he already had his 9th double already. I mean, if you got 20 or 25 in a season, that's pretty damn freaking good. He's got 9 already. It's just, it's different off his bat. There's something.
Sure is.
There's something Manny-ish about it, David about it. There's something about how it comes off his bat that's just different. And I would have loved for Christian Campbell to really been, you know, somebody that locked in right away and has been a staple. And he may be in the future. But to Nick's point, seeing guys like Anthony, Navarez, and maybe changing the culture of this club, I don't know. If Devers was still here, were they 10-0? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But I can tell you this, it's fun talking about winning again, and I want to see them go out and get 1-2 guys that are going to impact this team, whether it be a number 2 starter, maybe another bat, I don't know. But they're going to have to do something to show this team that they are with them and they are going for it, because I think they can get in. I'm pretty confident they can get in. And I think they could make some noise in the playoffs too. Because again, it's not about just being the 3rd wild card or 2nd wild card. The American League is not that great. And I think they could make some noise in that playoffs. I don't know about the National League, if they were to make it to a World Series or not. But I think they could make some noise in the early part of the playoffs. So with that being said, I'm going to call it for tonight. I'd like to thank Nick and Thayer for being on with me. This was a fun one. I'm giddy as a schoolboy, as they all say, and I'm hoping, you know, for some great output in the second half. If anything major happens between now and our next show scheduled for Friday, if there's any kind of major trades, we'll have an emergency podcast to share with you guys our breakdowns. But other than that, we'll see you on Friday. Have a great week. I hope you guys enjoy the All-Star game if you're going to watch, and we will see you on Friday. Have a good week, everybody.